Welcome to Defenders, the teaching class of Dr. William Lane Craig. Today, The Existence of God, Part 17. And for more information and resources, go to reasonablefaith.org.
We've been talking about the fine-tuning of the universe for intelligent life, and we saw that there are three possible explanations for the fine-tuning of the cosmos: either physical necessity, chance, or design. And we saw that physical necessity is highly improbable because the values of these constants and arbitrary physical quantities are independent of the laws of nature. The laws of nature are consistent with a wide range of values for these constants and quantities. So there isn't any physical necessity that the universe should exhibit this kind of fine-tuning. Then we began to look at the hypothesis of chance, and we argued that the odds against all of these constants and quantities falling by chance alone into this incomprehensibly narrow life-permitting range are so infinitesimal that these odds cannot be reasonably faced. Now, in response to that, you'll remember we encountered a couple of objections to try to save the chance hypothesis. For example, the appeal to a lottery in which all the tickets are sold, and yet someone has to win, no matter how improbable that might be. And we saw why that analogy was flawed. The proper analogy would be a lottery in which billions and billions of billions of white balls are mixed together with one black ball. And you're told that unless the black ball is picked, you're going to be shot and killed. And then lo and behold, out of the horde, a random ball is picked and it turns out to be the black one and you're allowed to live. You ought to think that the lottery was rigged. Why? Not because the black ball is any more improbable than any particular white ball. Each ball is equally improbable. But because it is overwhelmingly and comprehensively more probable that whichever ball is picked, it will be white rather than black. Similarly, our universe is no more improbable than any other universe, but it is overwhelmingly more probable that whichever universe exists, it will be life-prohibiting rather than life-permitting. And so we still need some sort of explanation as to why a life-permitting universe exists against all probability to the contrary. Now, some people have argued that no explanation is needed for why we observe a life-permitting universe such as we do. They say that we can only observe a life-permitting universe because if the values of the constants were not life-permitting, we couldn't be here to observe it. We can only observe life-permitting universes because the ones that aren't life-permitting are inconsistent with our existence. And this is the so-called anthropic principle. The anthropic principle says that we can observe only properties of the universe that are consistent with our existence. And that's obviously true. It's necessarily true. If the fundamental properties of the universe were inconsistent or incompatible with our existence, obviously we couldn't be here to observe it. So the only kind of universe we can observe is a life-permitting universe, right? That's obvious that that's the only kind of universe we can observe. And from this obvious truth, they infer, therefore, no explanation is needed for why a life-permitting universe exists. Now, this reasoning is logically fallacious. From the fact that we can observe only life-permitting universes, it doesn't follow that no explanation is needed for why there is a life-permitting universe, why it does exist. And again, I think an illustration can help us to see the point. Imagine that you're traveling abroad in some third world country, and you're arrested on trumped up drug charges and convicted, and you're dragged in front of a firing squad of 100 trained marksmen, all with rifles aimed at your heart to be executed. And you hear the command given, ready, aim, fire! And you hear the deafening roar of the guns. And then you observe that you're still alive, that all of the 100 marksmen missed. Now, what would you conclude? Well, I guess I really shouldn't be surprised that they all missed. After all, if they hadn't all missed, I wouldn't be here to be surprised about it. Given that I'm here, I should have expected them all to miss. Well, of course not. You would immediately suspect that they all missed on purpose, that the whole thing was a setup, engineered by someone for some reason. From the fact that you shouldn't be surprised that you don't observe that you're dead, it doesn't follow that you shouldn't be surprised that you do observe that you're alive. Do you see the point? You shouldn't be surprised that you don't observe that you're dead. You can't observe that. You shouldn't be surprised that you don't observe you're dead. But it doesn't follow from that that you shouldn't be surprised that you do observe that you're alive in light of the enormous improbability of they're all missing by accident. Given that enormous improbability, you ought to be very surprised that you do observe that you're alive. In fact, as I say, you'd probably think that the whole thing was designed, that the reason the marksmen all missed was because it was intentional, that this was brought about not by chance, but by design. Any question then about the anthropic principle and the fallacious use of it to try to avert the necessity of an explanation of fine-tuning? Steve.
Seems like there's two possibilities. You could say it was designed, or there's a extreme infinity of, and either one is just as plausible.
Very good. That's exactly right, Steve. What you could say instead is, it's not that they all missed on purpose. It is that unbeknownst to me, there's an infinite number of other people standing in front of firing squads being shot at, and by chance alone, somewhere in that ensemble of firing squads, all of the 100 marksmen would miss by accident. And for the person to whom that happens, he shouldn't be surprised at being alive. It just was by chance. And so the other explanation is that, aha, they all miss by chance because there's an infinite number of other firing squads out there that I don't know about and can't see. That would be the other explanation. And that will form a nice segue to the many worlds hypothesis to explain away fine-tuning. But I think it's a helpful illustration because I think we see how absurd that would be for someone to conclude such a thing. It clearly is the better explanation to think the marksmen all missed on purpose than to think that you're just one of an infinite ensemble of other victims in front of firing squads. But good point. Okay, any other question about the use of the anthropic principle without the existence of a world ensemble of other worlds? Tammy, is this clear to you? Good. Okay. Anybody else? Yeah. Well, I do think that's a good point. I'll reiterate his point since it wasn't on the mic. He said, if you expand your probabilistic resources in this way, then you can explain anything away, and it becomes ridiculous. Now, what he means by expanding your probabilistic resources is this. If you can't get, say, double sixes in one throw of the dice, well, then you imagine, say, 25 throws of the dice or 100 throws of the dice, and then you're probably going to get double sixes at some point. You've expanded your probabilistic resources in order to explain the chance result. And the point that he's making is, if you expand your probabilistic resources by saying, well, this isn't the only universe there is, there are all these other parallel universes that we can't see where things are going on, then you could explain virtually anything away. Somebody playing at cards who gets four aces every time he deals could reply, well, there's an infinite number of poker games going on in this world ensemble, and in some of them, every time I deal, I get four aces. So what are you complaining about? And no protest could be made, because you can explain anything by chance. And yet that would be absurd. If you were sitting at the table with that guy, would you sit down for another round of cards? Well, I should hope not. Yeah, he points out that you wouldn't make any life decision practically based on this kind of reasoning. It would make rational behavior literally impossible, because everything could be attributed to chance. Let's be sure we get the mic to anybody who asks a question. Okay, Steve?
The reason I bring that up is that is exactly what the new physicists are saying to try to get rid of the age of the universe, that the Many Bain theory and they're seeing infinite series of creations of worlds.
Yes, that's exactly right. And that forms a nice segue then to our next point, which is that theorists have therefore come to recognize that the use of the anthropic principle cannot eliminate the need for an explanation of the fine-tuning unless you posit this world ensemble of parallel universes, which are real and just as actual as this one, and which are randomly ordered in the values of their constants and quantities. So according to the world ensemble hypothesis, or many worlds hypothesis, as it's sometimes called, our universe is just one member of a world ensemble, preferably an infinite world ensemble of other universes, and these are all randomly ordered in their constants and quantities, so that by chance alone, somewhere in the world ensemble, life-permitting, finely tuned worlds will exist. Now, since only the finely tuned universes have observers in them, right? The other ones are life-prohibiting. Since only the finely tuned worlds have observers in them, the observers in the world ensemble will naturally observe their universes to be finely tuned. And so there wouldn't need to be any explanation of this. You wouldn't need to appeal to design to explain fine-tuning. It's purely due to chance. Now, is there any comprehension question before I offer some reflections on the many worlds hypothesis? Do you understand how this explains away design by chance by saying that your probabilistic resources include this infinite number of other universes? Any comprehension type question on that? Ben? Okay.
The first thing that comes to my mind is they apparently don't present any mechanism for having all these universes. You can't even have, I mean, there's one thing that's kind of popular, at least in sci-fi, where you have multiple universes because you have multiple timelines. Every time a choice is made, both ways are actually done, and you split off another timeline.
Yeah.
This can't even go that way because you have all these universes where there's nothing there to make a choice because they're lifeless. And if all the fine-tuning is done from, presumably from the Big Bang, you know, in those universes, you know, there is nothing there but something else. So they have no mechanism for actually having all these universes. It's pure speculation.
Okay, now you're raising the question of the mechanisms, and I will comment on that in a moment. But that's, again, a critical comment. I want to just be sure everybody understands it. Is there any comprehension-type question before we look at critical comments? Joe?
Real quick, can you distinguish between many worlds and multiverse, or are you using, is that the same?
I'm using those synonymously, Joe. The many worlds hypothesis takes different forms. Ben has identified one, which would be the many worlds interpretation of quantum physics, which says that every time a quantum measurement is made by a classical apparatus, the universe splits in two and the correlated values of the measurement both exist, the universe sort of forks. It's a fantastic interpretation of reality to think that, as one person put it, a mouse by observing something could split the universe. That would be one. Another interpretation would be inflationary theories of the universe, where our universe is just a bubble of true vacuum in a broader false vacuum that is expanding at fantastic speeds. And within this false vacuum, there are lots of other bubbles, too. And that is another way the multiverse scenario plays itself out. Probably that's the most popular today. But then there are others as well as to how you might have many worlds. Dawkins in The God Delusion suggests an oscillating theory of the universe, where the universe expands, and contracts from eternity past. And each time the constants and quantities are recycled and get new values. So that would be another form of the many worlds hypothesis. And so I'm not distinguishing between multiverse and other world ensemble theories. They're all basically trying, as was said, to multiply our probabilistic resources. If we can't get it in one throw of the dice, we'll posit an infinite number of throws, and then you're assured to get your chance result. Yeah, Gabe?
Just a quick definition again, if you don't mind. We talk about having a possible universe where it's life permitting. Now, are we being gracious in saying that that's necessarily a certainty that life would develop, or is there a conditional probability within that where you'd have life permitting but not necessarily the development of life?
The latter. We're saying that these constants and quantities being finely tuned are merely prerequisites for life, but they are not sufficient conditions for life. As someone mentioned on another in another class, you would still need to have a planet that is situated at a certain distance from its star. It would need to have a moon that would affect the tides. There would need to be a Jupiter in the solar system to serve as a vacuum cleaner to suck in asteroids and comets that would otherwise bombard the planet and destroy life. There are all kinds of other conditions that would need to be fulfilled as well to have a life permitting planet. But here we're talking just about these bare initial conditions that would be prerequisites for life. And so that's why I use the language, or these theorists use the language, of life permitting versus life prohibiting. They're not by any means life guaranteeing. All right, well, I want to pause for a moment here to reflect on what's happening in this debate. I want to reflect on what's going on here. The current debate over the fine-tuning of the universe has become a debate over the many worlds hypothesis. This is, in fact, the cutting edge of the discussion today. This is at the heart of the discussion of fine-tuning. In order to explain the fine-tuning of the universe, we are being asked not to believe merely that there are other universes unobservable by us, but that there is an infinite number of these other universes, and moreover, that they are all randomly ordered in their constants and quantities so as to guarantee by chance alone that some of them will be finely tuned. All of this is needed to guarantee that a life-permitting world will appear somewhere by chance in the ensemble. Now, when you think about it, this is really extraordinary. Otherwise, hard-headed, sober scientists would not be flocking to embrace so metaphysical a hypothesis unless they felt absolutely compelled to do so. This recourse to the world ensemble is a kind of backhanded compliment, really, to the power of the design argument. It shows the lengths to which people will go in order to avoid a designer of the universe. The odds against a life-permitting universe are just so incomprehensibly great that in order to explain it away, you've got to recur to metaphysics and to the postulation of this sort of world ensemble in order to save the chance hypothesis. So, if somebody says to you, well, it could have happened by chance, or it was just dumb luck, then what you should say to them in response is, well, if that's the case, then why is it that scientists feel compelled to embrace the many worlds hypothesis in order to explain it away? They wouldn't be embracing so extravagant a metaphysical hypothesis unless they felt really compelled to do so. And so this very alternative is itself, I think, testimony to the fact that chance alone won't explain the fine-tuning. The odds against it are just too great unless you appeal to the world ensemble in order to guarantee that the chances will be fulfilled somewhere. Now, how might one respond to the many worlds hypothesis? We might just leave it there and say, take your pick, either a divine designer or else a many worlds hypothesis, and it's up to you, which do you think is more plausible? But I think we can actually say more than that. Let me offer three comments by way of response to the many worlds hypothesis. One way to respond to the many worlds hypothesis would be to show that the multiverse itself also involves fine-tuning. You see, in order to be scientifically credible, the many-worlds hypothesis has to posit some sort of a mechanism for generating these many worlds. But this mechanism had better not be fine-tuned itself, or all you've done is just kick the problem upstairs. you've still got the same problem. Like a stubborn bump in the carpet, you depress it at one point over to only to have it pop up somewhere else. So if the fine-tuning is to be explained away by the many-worlds hypothesis, the mechanism that generates the many-worlds had better not be fine-tuned. If it is, the problem still persists and arises all over again. And the proposed mechanisms for generating a world ensemble are frankly so vague that it's far from evident that the physics governing the multiverse will be free of fine-tuning. These explanations pretty much amount to sort of hand-waving at this point, and so there's no way of knowing that they are going to be free from fine-tuning. For example, if M-theory is the physics of the multiverse, superstring theory that we talked about the other day, if M-theory is the theory that governs the multiverse, then, as you'll recall, it remains unexplained why there exist only 11 dimensions, or exactly 11 dimensions. The theory itself doesn't explain why that particular number of dimensions exists, so that fine-tuning still exists in the theory of the multiverse. And again, the mechanisms that actualizes all of the various possibilities permitted by M-theory in the cosmic landscape, that 10 to the 500th power of different possible universes that are permitted by M-theory, that cosmic landscape, the mechanism which generates the possibilities also may well involve fine-tuning. There are some pretty specific conditions that have to be met in order for this to work. So merely postulating a world ensemble is not in and of itself enough to explain away fine-tuning, because it's not at all clear that the world ensemble itself doesn't involve fine-tuning, and that you haven't really solved anything. That's the first response. Here's a second response. A good many theorists today are quite skeptical of the many-worlds hypothesis itself. Why, after all, think that a world ensemble of universes actually exists? Is there any independent evidence, apart from fine-tuning, for the existence of such a thing? Remember when we talked about the Kalam cosmological argument, we saw that the theorem developed by Bord, Guth, and Vilenkin in 2003 applies to the multiverse as a whole. And the Bord, Guth, Vilenkin theorem shows that even a multiverse of expanding bubble universes cannot be infinite in the past, but must have a beginning. Now, if that's the case, that means that the mechanism that generates the many worlds has only been chugging away for a finite amount of time. And therefore, it may well have generated only a finite number of universes in the world ensemble, in which case there's no guarantee at all that a finely tuned universe will have come to exist yet in the world ensemble. So there's really no evidence that an ensemble, which is required by the many-worlds hypothesis, actually exists. Now, by contrast with that, we do have independent reasons for thinking that a designer of the cosmos exists. Remember Al-Ghazali's argument for the beginning of the universe and the need of a transcendent creator who brought the universe into being, including all of the laws of nature. Remember Leibniz's argument for a sufficient reason for the existence of the universe, a reason which, again, must be found in a transcendent personal mind who is the ground of being for why there is something rather than nothing. So we have independent reasons already to think that there is a designer of the universe, but no independent reasons for thinking that a world ensemble exists. Finally, number three, the world ensemble hypothesis, or multiverse, or many worlds hypothesis, faces what may well be a devastating objection. You remember when we talked about the thermodynamic properties of the universe, we talked about Ludwig Boltzmann's many worlds hypothesis. Boltzmann, you'll recall, thought that the universe as a whole exists in a state of equilibrium, but that throughout the universe there will be little pockets of disequilibrium that occur by chance alone, and we are just one of those pockets of disequilibrium in a sea of equilibrium. And you remember what sank Boltzmann's hypothesis was that if our world is just a random member of a world ensemble, then it's vastly more probable that we should be observing a much tinier region of order than we do. A tiny region of disequilibrium is unfathomably more probable than the vast universe we see, and yet it would be sufficient for our existence. And therefore, Boltzmann's hypothesis has been rejected by contemporary physics. Well, it turns out that an exactly parallel problem to Boltzmann's many-worlds hypothesis also faces the modern many-worlds hypothesis as an explanation of cosmic fine-tuning. And this objection has been very forcefully stated by Roger Penrose of Oxford University, for example, in his book, The Road to Reality. Penrose points out that the odds of our universe's initial low entropy condition are just incomprehensibly small. One chance out of 10 to the power of 10 to the power of 123. Just an incomprehensible number. By contrast, he says, the odds of our solar system just falling together by accident, by just the random collision of particles. Imagine particles swarming around, and all of a sudden they just fall together to form our solar system. He says this would be about one chance out of 10 to the power of 10 to the power of 60. Now, that's a huge number, obviously. But nevertheless, Penrose says this is utter chicken feed in comparison with 10 to the 10th to the 123rd. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means that if we are just a random member of a world ensemble, then we should be observing a universe no larger than our solar system. Why? Because this sort of universe is vastly, vastly more probable than one that is finely tuned for our existence. There are simply many, many more universes or observable universes in the world ensemble which are small, like the size of our solar system, than which are large, like the finely tuned universe we observe. And so if we are just a random member of a world ensemble, we should be observing an orderly world no larger than, say, our solar system. That is unfathomably more probable than a finely tuned universe, because most of the observable universes in the world ensemble are these small ones. In fact, we can carry the argument farther. We actually wind up with the same sort of illusionism that plagued Ludwig Boltzmann's hypothesis. You see, a small universe with the illusion of a wider universe is vastly more probable than a real wider universe. And so, carried to its logical extreme, this has led to what some theorists have called, in language reminiscent of grade B horror movies from the 1950s, the invasion of the Boltzmann brains. The invasion of the Boltzmann brains. Now, what is a Boltzmann brain? A Boltzmann brain is a brain that just pops into being through a thermal fluctuation in the equilibrium, like the solar system falling together by chance. It's vastly more probable than 10 to the 10 to the 60th that just a single brain would fall together by chance with an illusion of the external world that we observe. That is vastly more probable. The vast majority of observable universes in the world ensemble will be worlds that just have a Boltzmann brain in them. So, if you're going to accept the many-worlds hypothesis to explain fine-tuning, you are rationally obligated to believe that you are a Boltzmann brain and that your friends, this room, the external world are all illusions of your projected consciousness. Well, no sane person believes that he is a Boltzmann brain. Therefore, on atheism, it is highly improbable that there exists a randomly ordered world ensemble. Given atheism, it is vastly more probable that there is no world ensemble. The fact that we observe this wide, orderly universe disconfirms the many-worlds hypothesis. Ironically, The best hope for the partisans of a multiverse theory is theism. Theism. Because if God exists, he could create many worlds and plan them to have life in them according to his design. They would not be randomly ordered. They would be designed. God could give preference to worlds which are cosmically fine-tuned. And so in order to be rationally acceptable, it turns out that the many worlds hypothesis requires God. I think that if you're going to be a many worlds theorist, you need to be a theist, because otherwise the evidence heavily disconfirms the multiverse hypothesis. So with the failure of the many worlds hypothesis, the last ring of defense for the hypothesis of chance falls away. Neither physical necessity nor chance seem to give a good, plausible explanation of the fine-tuning of the universe. Now, the question will be, does design fare any better? Is the design hypothesis equally implausible, or is it superior as an explanation? Well, that will be the question that we'll address in our next lesson. Let me ask in the closing minute if there's any question about these three responses to the World Ensemble hypothesis. Okay, Joe?
Real quick, could you, that last sub-point about it being a better theistic worldview fit, could you restate that really quickly?
Yeah, the idea there, Joe, is that the finely tuned universes would not appear in the ensemble by chance, but it would rather be that they're designed by God, so that he makes a world ensemble in which he creates worlds that wouldn't result by chance, and therefore you could have these finely tuned worlds in them, and it wouldn't simply be a matter of randomness. Yes, Jonathan.
In referring to the multiverse theory, wouldn't this fall under the category of what is known as the gambler's fallacy, seeing how as we only have one sample size, namely the universe which we live in now?
The question here is whether or not this commits actually what's called a reverse gambler's fallacy, in which because I have, say, won at roulette, I therefore conclude, gee, there must be a lot of other roulette wheels spinning and in other rooms games going on, and that's why I can explain this by chance alone. And the reverse gambler's fallacy is that doesn't explain why the roulette wheel came up with my number, just positing many other ones. I don't think that it commits a reverse gambler's fallacy because of what I said last week, namely, we're not trying to explain why this universe exists or why this particular constellation of constants and quantities exist. What we're just trying to explain is why any life-permitting universe exists, and not why this particular one does. This one is just as improbable as any other one, but what is more probable is that a life-prohibiting world rather than a life-permitting world would exist. And so I don't think it commits that fallacy, but that's a very good question that you're raising. All right, well, next time then we'll look at the design hypothesis, but until then, I wish you a good week.
The copyright for the content of this recording is held by Dr. William Lane Craig. For more, go to reasonablefaith.org.